Reading from 1 Peter 1, verse 13 to 25. 1 Peter 1. Therefore, with minds that are alert and fully sober, set your hope on the grace to be brought to you when Jesus Christ is revealed at his coming. As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance. But just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, "Be holy, because I am holy." Since you call on a Father who judges each person's work impartially, live out your time as foreigners here in reverent fear. For you know that it is not with perishable things such as silver or gold that you were redeemed from the empty way of life handed down to you from your ancestors, but with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. He was chosen before the creation of the world, but was revealed in these last times for your sake. Through him you believe in God, who raised him from the dead and glorified him, and so your faith and hope are in God. Now that you have purified yourself by obeying the truth, that you have sincere love for each other, love one another deeply from the heart. For you've been born again, not of perishable seed, but of imperishable, through the living and enduring word of God. For all people are like grass, and all their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of the Lord endures forever. And this is the word that was preached to you. Thank you.
Well, good morning. Thank you for this privilege of being able to share with you this morning. I just come back from Ontario, and one of my friends was telling me that at their church, as they commence on a Sunday morning, the pastor asks everyone to stand, and then he says to them, put out your hands. Everyone just put out your hands. And then he says to them, now just turn them over and let go of everything you've brought. The sorrow, the pain, the anxiety, the worry, the concern, just let it go. And then turn them over and let the Lord give to you what you need this morning. And that's my prayer for all of us as we gather in his house today. Well, the message for this morning is from 1 Peter. And in 15 we read, just as he who called you is holy, be holy in all you do. It's a challenge to all of us, called to be holy. What does it mean? What does holiness mean? Well, first let us look at what holiness is not. It's not a holier-than-thou attitude. It's not living on a pedestal. It's not walking around wearing a halo. It's not pretending to be something we are not. It's not having a balcony view and looking down on everybody as though they were second-class citizens. See, holiness is a lifestyle. Holiness, called to be holy, is called to be like Jesus. It's called to be like Jesus. In Hebrews 12:1, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. If we were to be holy, we were to be like him. I'm interested in the way Peter writes to the church. He addresses them and says that you are scattered strangers in the land. Scattered strangers in the world, actually. And then in verse 17, he challenges them and says, live as strangers. Live as strangers. We are strangers here. We are to be different. We're not the same as the world, nor were we meant to be. This is not our permanent dwelling. We often sing, I'm but a stranger here, heaven is my home. We've got to live as though it were so. In verse 14 of 1 Peter, he reminds us to not to be conformed to this world, but to be transformed by the power of his Spirit. Holy living is being separated, not isolated. Holy living is being in the world, as we often say, but not of the world. What does this mean? To me, it means we're not like everyone else. We are different because Christ lives in us and we are changed. We were never meant to blend in. Someone said to me on one occasion, "You're no different just because you wear a uniform." And I replied, "You're right. The difference is not in the way I look, but in the way I live." We're meant to be noticed because of a Christ-like life we are living. It means living in the power and strength of the Holy Spirit. We read this morning in verse 18, reminded that we are redeemed. We are the redeemed. When we lived in Bermuda, the beautiful old church, St. Peter's Church, one of the oldest churches, and very often we would take our friends and tourists there. And the elderly Bermudian woman that looked after the church, she said to me on one occasion, "Come on out to the back. I want to show you something." She opened a great big ledger kind of book with lots of dates and various things that were in it, the history of the church. And then she said to me, "Look at this. See that red line right along there? That is the date when we were freed. That red line is the line of our redemption, the line of our freedom. We don't have to sit in the balcony anymore. We can sit wherever we wish. There's freedom now." And I said to her, "Yes, and that red line reminds me of the red line of the blood of Christ on Calvary that wrote our freedom. We are redeemed." How we love to proclaim it, redeemed indeed. Well, Christ set the example for us, didn't he? He was the first and foremost of all things I think of when I think of him. He was a man of prayer. If we're to be Christ-like, we have to be people of prayer. He so often went away alone to pray, and so we ought to as well. Remember the old song? Take time to be holy. Speak oft with thy Lord. Speak oft with thy Lord, a time away with him. The song that says, what a privilege it is to carry everything to God in prayer. A privilege it is to be able to talk with him. One of the other songs says, Satan trembles when he sees the weakest saint upon his knees. Our prayer life is a strength that gives us a power to live for Christ in the world in which we live today. Most of you know that we spent a number of years in Pakistan. We lived in a little village for quite a number of years. And of course, it was camels that was the way of transportation in those days for us. The camels would come in every night from the city bringing the produce, and in the morning go back out to the city with whatever it was we were going to take to the city. But it was only when one of my friends came to visit us and said, isn't it interesting? I've never noticed this. It's only when the camel kneels that it can be relieved of its burden. And it's so with us. It's only when we kneel in prayer the burdens are lifted. That lovely song, "Burdens Are Lifted at Calvary." I've often talked about the time when Mary and I went way up into the mountains on the Afghanistan border. We had a little hut by the side of a rushing river from the mountains. One day I said to Mary, I think I'm going to go across that bridge and go up into the mountains for a while. I came back down an hour or two later, but couldn't find the bridge. I'd wandered so far, I'd got lost and didn't know where the bridge was. I walked along for a while on the river's bank. It was a rushing river. And then I saw another bridge that I had not seen before, obviously made by the people of the tribes. Didn't look very safe. Bits and pieces of wood tied together, strung together, low down into the water kind of, and it was swaying back and forth, and the surf from the water was all making it wet, and I'm not sure I can handle this. So I called I saw a man working in the field and said, "Can you come over here?" Fortunately, he spoke Punjabi. And I said, I want to get across this bridge, but it doesn't look terribly safe, but obviously you use it all the time. I wondered if maybe you wouldn't mind just going ahead of me, and I'll hang on to you, and together we'll go across the bridge together. You know, and he said, oh, no, no, he said. Then we'll both drown. We'll both drown. So I said to him, all right, then, how do I get across? I'll never forget what he said. Sob, there's only one safe way. That's on your knees. I put my pride in my pocket and went across safely on my knees. Haven't you found it to be so? Sometimes in our own experience, our pilgrimage with the Lord, sometimes the only safe way is on our knees. Take time to be holy. It says the world rushes on. Spend much time in secret with Jesus the Lord. By looking to Jesus, like him thou shalt be. Thy friends and thy conduct, his likeness shall see. And all week I've been thinking of a simple little verse. I think it's how we all feel this morning. To be like Jesus, this hope possesses me. In every thought and deed, this is my aim, my creed. To be like Jesus, this hope possesses me. His Spirit helping me, like him I'll be. His Spirit helping me. It's only when his Spirit is alive within us that we can be the kind of people he can use. Jesus gave his job description in Luke chapter 4, didn't he? Stood up to preach and the prophet to speak and read from the prophet. And it's very often called in Luke 4 the Nazareth Manifesto. And he read these words from the prophecy. I am anointed to preach good news to the poor, to proclaim freedom to the prisoners, recovery of sight to the blind, and bring relief to the oppressed. We all know people who need the good news, don't we? We all know people who are bound by sin. We all know people who are blinded to the gospel. We all know people who are living under sin's oppression. So surely this is our mandate as well, as it was his. We had a chap that used to go into our villages, do what we called a needs assessment. What does this village need and how can we help? He came into my office one day, very excited, lovely, fine Christian young Pakistani. And he said, we've given some stuff up into the Tal Desert. You need to know, Colonel, and tell them how wonderful they're doing. They need to be encouraged. And I want you to go up and tell them how pleased we are with what they're doing. I said, all right, I will. He said, we need to do it tomorrow. I said, well, it might interest you to know I had other things. No, no, you've got to go tomorrow. All right, we'll go tomorrow. So we went up, showed me where he'd given some goats to some people, some chicken to some people. They'd be making some quilts and doing various other things for the women and the children's work. And then he said, but there's one more thing I want you to see, Colonel. He said, out there is a man, and he's got two girls, and he used the word retarded, that are retarded, and he's got them locked in a cattle shed. And that's not good, Colonel, and I think you could go and tell him he shouldn't have them there. I said, all right, my bus should lead the way. So we went, and we did all the cultural things. We had some tea, and then I asked him to introduce his children. He introduced me to four boys. And I said, have you any other children? He said, yeah, we have two other girls, and they're out there. He pointed to the cattle shed. I said, I'd like to see them. And I watched as he unlocked the cattle shed. These girls came out, about 12 or 13 years of age. One, wherever you led her, she would come. And the other girl was clapping her hands and pulling her hair and laughing and then starting to cry. It's a terrible thing to see. Baba, she says to me, that's not good. Is it, Colonel, these girls shouldn't be in that cattle shed? I said, no, they shouldn't. I said, Mabasha, we have a place in Lahore where Mother Teresa's sisters will look after them, organize for them to be. Oh, he said, that's good, Colonel, because I got another weird place tomorrow I want you to see. I said, Mabasha, this was supposed to be one, it is one day at a time. So the next day I went to a place called Issa Nagri. Wouldn't you like to live in a place called Issa Nagri, which means the dwelling of Jesus? And as we went into the village, they came toward us clapping and singing, and he lifted up a little girl and he said, see this girl, when I came here, he said, she was lying on a bed in the middle of the sun, in the middle of the heat of the day. And I said, why is that little girl there like that? And they said, oh, well, she's crippled. So there's no need for a crippled girl to be there. I took her into Lahore. I took her to the girls' home. They took her to the hospital. They did the surgery that needed to be done. Then she had the physiotherapy. And there she is running around today. I said, oh, Mabasha, that's good to hear. He said, that's good because there are two blind boys in the next village, and I want you to see them as well. I said, we'll do something for the blind boys. But on the way home, I looked at him in the vehicle and I said, you know, Mabasher, you have the eyes of Jesus. Because that's just what Jesus did. Wherever he went, he saw a need and he did something. He did something. That's Christ-like. When we see things that need to be done, when we look at what the need is and how we should be responding, what do we do? Well, look at the life and the example of Jesus. He was never too busy for people. He made children his priority. He ate with sinners and was criticized for it. He had tea with a tax collector, didn't he? He forgave a woman who was found taken in adultery. He had time for a Samaritan woman of ill repute. He allowed a woman to wash his feet. He stooped to wash the feet of his disciples. How much of that Christ-like spirit is found in us? How much of this is us? You see, I see Christ as a compassionate Christ. I like to look at Jesus with outstretched arms, saying, come to me. You're welcome here. And if we're to be Christ-like, if we're to be his people, if we're going to be the godly people he wants us to be, surely this must be us as well. The world needs to see us as Christian people as a welcoming Jesus. We, as his church, are his representatives. He calls us to be Christ-like. I've always thought of the story of the Good Samaritan, that Jesus is the Good Samaritan, and he brings wounded, hurting, suffering, lonely people to us, and we are the innkeeper, and he says to us, take care of them. Take care of them. You don't have to save them. I'll do that. All I'm asking you to do is care for them. Just take care of them. I ask myself, well, what would Jesus do? There's a hymn that says this. Down in the human heart, crushed by the tempter, feelings lie buried that grace can restore. And then it says, touched by a loving hand, that's us. Wakened by kindness, that's us. Chords that were broken will vibrate once more. I don't know how many of you have been to the Vatican and seen that beautiful marble statue titled the Pietà. It's a marble statue of Mary at the foot of the cross, holding the broken body of Jesus. And an author has written a book entitled Holding Broken Bones, and he says, that's who the church is. Holding broken people. People come with their brokenness, their hurt, their pain, their suffering, their loneliness. And he brings them to us. And he asks us as his people to be Christ-like, to hold them, just to hold them. A young girl came into the church, unmarried with two small children, and she wrote these words. If this is not a place where tears are understood, where shall I go to cry? I don't need another place for trying to impress you as how good and virtuous I am. I don't need another place for always being on top of things. Everyone knows that's a sham. I don't need another place for always wearing smiles even when it's not the way I feel. I don't need another place to mouth the same old platitudes. Everyone knows that's not real. So if this is not a place where my questions can be asked, where shall I go to seek? If this is not the place where my heart cry can be heard, where shall I go to speak? So if this is not a place where tears are understood, where shall I go to fly? We're called to be holy. We're called to be Christ-like. We're called to be welcoming people. Welcoming people. When I was at the Staff College in London, England, there were about 40 of us from around the world. And on a Sunday night, we went to a drug addiction center to do a Sunday night service. And after the service, as we were in the parking lot, I said to the gentleman in charge of this place, I said, so what are those six big vans doing out there? What's that for? We said, those are the vans we use. Every night we go out and we feed the people who are living under the bridges of London. There are hundreds of people living under the bridges of London. And we go out every night and we give them soup and we give them donuts, we give them coffee and we talk to them and we get to know them. I said, I didn't know we did that. Well, we do. He said, would you like to see it? I said, I would like to see it. Well, he said, how about if we come to the college tomorrow night about 10 o'clock? If you could get five or six people to go with us, we're always looking for volunteers. Maybe you could help us. Feed the hungry. I said, all right, 10 o'clock, we'll be ready. And on the way back to the cottage, I said, now what have I done? I basically said that six of us are going to miss a night's sleep. That's what I've done. And I've got to find five more people who will, yes, I'll be glad to do that. Well, by supper time, I still needed one more. There was a young chap. His name was Tor from Sweden. And I said to him, Tor, you should come with us. This is a wonderful thing to see. You go back to Sweden and start doing this. This will be a wonderful thing for your people to see. Oh, Bill, my English is not so good. Tor, all you got to do is say soup. Write it on your hand, soup. That's all you got to say. Tor, you don't have to, all right, I will go. So he came with us. And I guess we were on about the fourth or fifth, one of these bridges flash the lights and people come out from under cardboard and newspapers and blankets and some well-dressed and some not so well-dressed. One of the volunteers came back to the van where I was serving the coffee and he said, there's a man out there, can't understand him really, he's got a whole handful of pills. All he wants is a drink, he's going to take them. But I don't quite understand what he's saying because he's says he's from Sweden. And I said to Tor, that's why you're here. That's why you're here. Go and see if you can help this man. So Tor went with him. They spoke to him, willing to take him into the van. They took him back to the center. About 7 o'clock in the morning, I was on my way back from one of the buildings. And I saw Tor getting out of the vehicle. So I went over to him. I said, You're just getting home? He said, yes. But Bill, early this morning, that man accepted Jesus. And this morning they're taking him to the airport. They'll take him back to Sweden. Someone will meet him. He's going into a treatment center. We went to morning prayers at 8 o'clock. As we were singing the first hymn, I was at the piano, and I could see that Tor just quietly came and knelt at the altar at the front. And from where I was sitting, I could see that he was crying. So I left the piano and went and knelt with him and put my arms around him. Tears streaming down his face, he looked into my eyes and said, "Bill, I almost didn't go. I almost didn't go. I almost didn't go." There's an urgency to saying yes to Jesus. We're called to be holy. We're called to be Christ-like, obedient to his will. Only one life. It will soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last. Will you pray with me? Father, help us by your Holy Spirit to move from this place determined to be Christ-like by the strength and power of your Spirit. In his name, amen.